This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about attraction. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Attraction can be a complicated issue to parse out for humans, and we tend to think it's more straightforward with other animals. I mean, we don't call it animal attraction for nothing, right? But turns out mating is also pretty nuanced in the animal kingdom. Grant Hill has more.
In 1859, Charles Darwin published On the Origin of Species, his groundbreaking treatise on natural selection, the idea that over the course of generations, species change and evolve in ways that favor their survival. But something gnawed at Darwin, a potential hole in his theory of evolution.
Darwin sent a letter to this famous botanist, Asa Gray, and he said something like, "Every time I gaze at a peacock's tail, it makes me sick."
That's Michael Ryan. He is a professor of integrative biology at the University of Texas and the author of A Taste for the Beautiful, The Evolution of Attraction. Michael says the male peacock did not fit into Darwin's new theory of natural selection. The bird's ornate tail was like a huge, heavy target on its back, a big sign for predators screaming, "I'm here, I'm slow, eat me."
If anything, these traits should decrease survivorship, not increase it.
Eventually, it led Darwin to believe that something else, some parallel force, must be at play. Not just natural selection, but also sexual selection.
Natural selection favors traits that enhance survivorship. Sexual selection favors traits that enhance an individual's ability to acquire mates.
The theory explained why so many other males across the animal kingdom have seemingly useless characteristics and abilities. Generally speaking, because females often produce far fewer eggs than males produce sperm, females have to be more choosy about their partners. But what exactly are they looking for? What fuels their preferences? Michael is trying to figure that out, and he's focusing his efforts on the mating call of the Tungara frog in Panama. They are small, brown, and covered in warts. The males sing to attract mates.
So all of these males, they make a line. Yeah. And all of these males can add to that line a chuck. Yeah.
Michael was curious about the variation, which kind of calls female Tungara frogs preferred. So he constructed a little simulated frog love shack, placing a female Tungara frog in between two speakers. The speaker on one side would replay a call with just a whine sound.
Yeah.
The speaker on the other side, a whine and a chuck. And?
85% of the time, they prefer the whine chuck.
Michael scanned the female frog's brain and saw neural excitement whenever a chuck sounded. Why? He really doesn't know. Some deep evolutionary response. But he can replicate the effects and add to it. Hack it, essentially. He found that the more chucks he played at the end of the mating call, the more a female responded.
If the chucks makes the male more attractive, and if he's out there to attract mates, why doesn't he always make chucks?
It's not like making the noise took a ton of extra effort. Michael looked into it.
Energetically, it doesn't cost anything. I mean, we've measured the energy they use.
Then Michael heard from a bat researcher, a buddy of his, that he had seen one of his bats eating one of Michael's frogs in the wild. It gave Michael an idea. He brought one of those bats into the simulated frog love shack.
We play them a whine from one speaker, a whine chuck from another speaker. They fly directly to the whine chuck, sometimes even landing on the speaker, trying to get to the frog inside.
So male frogs have to walk a delicate line, make just enough extra noise to get the ladies, but not enough to get eaten. It took Michael years to just scratch the surface of just this one frog's mating ritual. And each species has their own complicated preferences for mating. Lauren Augustine is the curator for reptiles and amphibians at the Philadelphia Zoo.
So we need to account for all of these different behaviors as well as their social dynamics. A lot goes into creating just one habitat here at the Reptile House, and we have over 50.
Part of her job is to make sure the creatures under her care proliferate.
Reptiles and amphibians use a lot of chemical cues that obviously is really hard for us to interpret or understand.
She's seen something as subtle as changes to barometric pressure trigger breeding. Studies show animals born in captivity are far less likely to successfully reproduce than those born in the wild. So Lauren is constantly making adjustments to her habitats, trying to stoke some fire in her cold-blooded animals, like a frog from Madagascar.
And I built an enclosure that was basically individual 10-gallon tanks filled with sphagnum and cocoa shell mixed together. So each frog could burrow in its cage. And then they had PVC tubes that connected to a big middle tank, right? And then I warmed them up and I rained on them and flooded their individual enclosure so that they would come up and then meet in the middle to try to create an explosive breeding situation.
Did it work?
It did not.
How much time did that take you, though?
It took me 2 years of working with that species before I thought up the idea, and then probably a year to implement.
Some of the animals she cares for are in danger. Their genetic partners carefully picked from a national stud book, then shipped in from mother zoos across the country. Getting those animals to breed is crucial. Millions of years of evolution on the line.
We have a pair of Galapagos tortoises here that are a recommended breeding pair. Last spring, we introduced the male to the females. And sure enough, we did get 3 clutches of eggs this year from our 99-year-old Galapagos tortoise female mommy, which is fantastic.
The eggs never developed into hatchlings. Still, it was a promising result from a difficult equation. It's hard to set up the perfect conditions to fuel attraction when you have no idea what perfect means, like how to get a wrinkly old tortoise to feel some magic with a carefully chosen stud.
They're genetically a pair, but that doesn't mean that they're a pair, right? It doesn't mean that he's going to like her, it doesn't mean she's going to like him, and that they are compatible. And we don't really give them that option. It's kind of infrequent with reptiles and amphibians right now, so we don't really look at those pheromones and preference.
The Philadelphia Zoo recently did score a win in kindling attraction with Chester, a spirited Francois Langer, a monkey the zoo's primate curator Michael Stern describes as businesslike.
He's a little bit standoffish. He kind of does his thing as a male. He surveys around and watches what's going on and protects his family. But as soon as he saw these young females moving in with him of the same species, he knew exactly what to do.
And the result?
And these were the first Francois Langers born here at Philadelphia Zoo in our 150-year history.
That story was reported by Grant Hill.